Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, January the 3rd, and welcome to our commentary. Well, I'm sure some of you are familiar with what happened on Monday night in the NFL Monday night game of the week between, I think it was Buffalo and Cincinnati. I think that was the game, a very important game with respect to the standings. So a lot of people were watching. And then I guess about 6 minutes into the game, one player was hit. He went down, and he's in critical condition right now. I forgot the young man's name, but he's a very talented young player with Buffalo. Look, I obviously the game is very violent, although I've been listening to experts and so on, and they think that this was a illegal hit or anything like that. If you watch the replay, what you see is that the tackle happens, the guy gets up, and then shortly after that, I guess within a few seconds, he collapses. So what did it? I don't know. Now, I will say this as a fan of the NFL game, I love, you know, those NFL films from the late 60s and 70s, and there's no question that the game is more violent than it was then. It has nothing to do with the game itself, I think. It's just the size of the players. I mean, just look at some of those films from the late 60s, like those Green Bay Packer films, or even those Dallas Cowboys films from the 70s, and just look at the size of the players, particularly the guys on the line. And I mean, it is most of the guys today that, you know, they're weighing over 300 pounds. A lot of those guys back then were weighing 260, 275, and that was big back then. So the game is not necessarily more violent, but the players are so much bigger and so much more athletic than they used to be. So anyway, it's a terrible, absolutely terrible thing. We're certainly praying for the young man to recover. At this moment, it's not even praying for recovery. We're praying for his life. At this moment, he's in very critical condition, and hopefully there's a miracle somewhere in this, and he can at least recover and get his life back. Whether he can ever play again, that I doubt. I doubt that very much. So a terrible tragedy right there on national TV on the Monday night game of the week. Today we're going to talk a little bit about three resolutions that Michael Goodwin made. Michael Goodwin is the very respected columnist with the New York Post. He writes a column over there frequently. And he has a huge readership because not only is the New York Post the fourth most read paper in the country, his column gets distributed everywhere. So a lot of people see what Michael Goodwin wrote. And he wrote a great one over the weekend where he's talking about three resolutions for 2023. I thought it was a fascinating column. I usually like his columns, so I guess this one was just a little bit better than usual, and he's normally very good. But I like this one because, first of all, resolution number one for Michael Goodwin is that President Biden does not seek re-election. That's actually good, and it's actually good for President Biden, because if President Biden were to announce that he's not seeking re-election, that would allow President Biden, I think, to break away a little bit from this lock that the left wing of the party has on him, and then they can worry about selecting another nominee. So I think it would actually be good for President Biden if he could step away from the partisanship and try to be the president that he has not been. He's been a very divisive president, and if he were to break away from the politics, that might give him a chance to be a little bit more unifying. Something he said he was going to do, but he hasn't done. The second resolution is that he's hoping that President Trump will retire, meaning step away from the political politics or the game and make an announcement saying that he's not running. Now, I don't expect that. Actually, I don't expect either one of these two things to happen. I'm not expecting President Biden to step away or not step down, but get out of the election or not seek re-election. That's the correct way to say it. And I'm not expecting President Trump to step aside either. In the case of President Trump, I think that a lot of his success is going to depend on where we are as a country in about 6 or 9 months. If we're in the middle of a difficult recession, which is what a lot of people are predicting, or if the border situation continues to get out of control, and then on top of that, energy prices, all of those things could make a Trump comeback a lot more attractive. At the moment, I don't see Trump coming back. I don't see President Trump honestly surviving the nomination. I think he would lose the nomination right now. But things could change. Things could change. It is an ever-changing situation. So those two resolutions, I don't think they're going to happen, but those are his resolutions. Now, it's the third one that really caught my attention, because here he is basically calling for his resolution for 2023 is that we have a better and more responsible media. And that I've got to agree with. Now, he's pinning his hopes, Mr. Goodwin is pinning his hopes on a editor at the Washington Post or maybe an editor at the New York Times to see the light and try to be more responsible, certainly more fair and balanced in their coverage. I don't see that happening, frankly. I don't see that happening again from either one of those two sources. But I do see some changes. The changes have nothing to do with being more fair. It have to do with what's happening in those newspapers and what's happening in the media in general. And I've got a post about this coming out on Wednesday. You may want to check it out. Right now, the Washington Post is laying off people. Now, normally when you lay off people, it's because you're losing money or because you're downsizing. You don't normally lay off people because you're doing well. Over on the television news cable side, the numbers are disastrous for CNN and for MSNBC. I mean, the numbers, CNN in what they call the key demo is like way down. In other words, the advertisers look at these key demos to advertise. A key demo in the television business is people between 25 and 54, the group that the advertisers go after, because that's the group that apparently buys more things. And at the moment, that group is not watching CNN. They're not watching MSNBC. Now, they do watch Fox, not in the same numbers that they used to, but they are still watching Fox. And it's one of those situations where cable news is frankly on the brink of disappearing, not because they want to change their ways, but because people are just not watching. So I'm kind of pinning my hopes on the American people turning off the TV. And that will make, I think, a lot of these news organizations realize that they've got to change. If they want to get the viewers back or the readers back, they're going to have to change and they're going to have to become more mainstream and less liberal. I'm hoping that's what happens. And if you look at the numbers, a lot of Americans agree with me on this. I think a lot of Americans are saying no more. They're not reading and they're not watching these channels. Let's talk a little bit about Arizona. They have a new governor in Arizona who took over. This was that very controversial election. Look, I don't know whether she won the election or not. I've got to accept her victory, because you cannot challenge something that you're not familiar with. But I will say this, that if you're going to be running for governor and you're also the person responsible for counting the votes, I see a little conflict of interest there. And I'm really surprised that this lady, I guess Governor Hobbs now, was not forced to resign her position as Secretary of State. It seems to me very, very odd that if you have a very controversial election, that one of the nominees is the person who has to sign off on the results. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So she's coming in with some serious challenges. Her victory was like 17,000 votes, very small margin. If you look at the map of Arizona, she basically won Phoenix. The rest of the state, she didn't win. So there are some real challenges there for her as governor. And I'm hoping that the Republican majorities in that state will put her to the test and force her to be a good governor. I don't know. But there is something very interesting about Arizona in a couple of years. They do have a senator's race because Senator Sinema will be up for re-election. Now, she's running as an independent, which means she'll have some challenges in the primary. Some Democrats may want to go after her. And if that happens, I think that does open up the possibility for Governor Ducey, who just finished his term a couple of days ago, for him to run for the Senate. And I think he'd be an excellent candidate. Always felt that he would be a fabulous candidate. I have a post over at the American Thinker Tuesday morning. I want you to check it out. And it has to do with that prison outbreak in the north of Mexico in Ciudad Juarez, which is right across from El Paso. That was bloody. I mean, if you see the video, apparently some people went in and there was a huge fight between the army and the guards and the prisoners. Like 14 people are dead. Who knows how many injured? I've seen as high as 40. But that is a real problem. This has happened in Mexico now a couple of times where the cartels or whatever, whoever the people were, feel free to go into a prison and just basically let people out. It's a real challenge because many of the people they're letting out could be potential soldiers for these cartels, and that's a problem for Mexico and I guess indirectly for the United States as well. So check out my post. It's over at the American Thinker on Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning, that would be today, the 3rd. Well, on this day in 1961, let me leave you with this little bit of history. This would be 62 years ago this week. The United States broke diplomatic relations with Cuba. What happened was that for a couple of years, the United States tried to deal with Castro. And then, you know, they just weren't getting anywhere. And in the 1960 presidential debate, both candidates, Senator Kennedy and Vice President Nixon, took a tough position on Cuba, more Senator Kennedy than Vice President Nixon. I think Nixon knew that the Bay of Pigs was being worked on, so he probably kept a low profile because of that. But Senator Kennedy was very critical of the Eisenhower administration on Cuba. And on this day in 1961, the United States said no more diplomatic relations. And a lot of people, I've spoken to my father, my late father, many times about this, and a lot of people saw that as a sign that the United States was finally going to deal with Cuba. At the time, Castro was going more and more radical all the time, more and more to the left all the time. And clearly the romance around his name was no longer there. It was great dissatisfaction in Cuba with promises not kept, with the economy and the shortages and the political prisons. You know, one of my father's cousins eventually ended up in a political prison as well. So the United States said, we're going to break relations with Cuba. And I think a lot of Cubans thought, okay, this is the beginning of the end. But unfortunately, there was a missed opportunity at the Bay of Pigs and also at the missile crisis. And there's Cuba. Castro is now dead. His brother is pretty much out of the loop, although he still runs the country, but he's not visible anymore. And Cuba is what it is, a total disaster where people are leaving as soon as they can get away. So that all started back in 1959. And on this day, again, 1961, the U.S. broke diplomatic relations with Cuba. And, again, I talk with my late father, and he was optimistic when this day came that the U.S. was finally fed up with Castro. But it didn't turn out that way. Castro survived with a little help from the Soviet Union, to say the least. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.